Like Step Up to the Streets, Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo, and hell, even Graffiti Bridge. Soundtrack slinging mega hits focused on music and dance subcultures get sequels, and they're usually disappointing. Saturday Night Fever begat Staying Alive, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
My name's Sean Collier. This is the number one movie in America. This is Lisa, and this is Wendy.
Dibs on Wendy. Sorry, for Bruce Springsteen reasons.
I mean, it's fine. I couldn't for the life of me be like, oh yeah, I know exactly which one Lisa and which one's Wendy.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying because of actual Wendy from The Revolution. I'm saying because of Wendy, the character in Bruce Springsteen lyrics.
Fair enough.
Bruce Springsteen and Prince are linked in my mind by John Turturro in Do the Right Thing. There's that scene where Mookie is trying to convince him that everyone he idolizes is black, right? And it's like, who's your favorite basketball player? Who's your favorite actor? Eddie Murphy. Who's your favorite singer? Prince. And John Turturro says, no, Bruce, because Bruce is the only person in 1988 who was conceivably white and as cool as Prince.
Right, exactly.
And he's the only person who is white and conceivably as cool as Prince in the history of time.
Yeah, that's fair.
I feel like he's also the only person, period, conceivably as cool as Prince in the history of time.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
I'm from New Jersey.
Oh, that's right. You stand for Jersey.
If you were from Minnesota, this would be a different story.
Yeah, I just don't see it like that for old Brucey. Which, it's fun. This is a double feature, basically. This is the I Want to Be a Star double feature. Purple Rain and Staying Alive.
There's
Thanks,
a
Tony.
Lot of similarities here, which should not be taken as me saying that Staying Alive is good or worth watching. But they are very similar.
They are very similar as I hold my hands 12 feet apart. Very similar.
I want to straight off the bat acknowledge and deal with the G.
Right.
The song is Stayin' Alive.
Yes.
And the film is Staying Alive. And right before we started recording, I dated a guy years ago who was obsessed with the Bee Gees, and I texted him.
Dave Theodore?
Like, yep. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, any thoughts about Staying Alive in the next 5 minutes? And he was like, what's your phone number? I'm calling you. And he was like, here's everything I have to say. But first of all, it's Staying Alive.
Oh, Dave. Bless his soul. He's right? The only person I know who is like that with the Bee Gees. And I cannot think about the Bee Gees or Dave without thinking of the other. So, and wow.
I don't want to problematize the letter G, but is that because break-in was break-in, and this is not meant to be taken as somehow, you know, not a white person movie? So they were like, we need to put the G back in there so everyone gets that this is a respectable Staying Alive.
We are staying alive. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, throughout this whole thing, it was just always... Sylvester Stallone wrote this?
I made it make sense. And here's how. Saturday Night Fever has some rocky qualities.
Did Sly write that one too?
No.
Okay.
He had nothing to do with it.
Oh.
But I bet
there's a rocky poster on his wall in his bedroom wall in Saturday Night Fever.
So right, I guess what he had to do with it is that I'm guessing whoever did write Saturday Night Fever was in some ways influenced by Rocky. Like they were probably in production at the same time. Enough, I think the influence shows. So I can see Stallone saying, hey, I get this story. And then if you think about it, Rocky III is kind of what this movie wants to be, right? Rocky III is the story about this guy becoming worldwide famous, right? As opposed to like he's the champ in Well, actually, no, he loses in Rocky. Then he's the champ in Rocky II. And now it's like, now he's going to become a serious professional, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That's what happens to Tony Manero in this movie. So I can see, like, this is before Rocky III, right?
I'm glad you brought it up because I did not bother writing this down for the Factsy segment. This is after Rocky III. Travolta saw Rocky III, said, mm-hmm. that's what we need to do. We need to do something like that. You need to get someone who directs like Sylvester Stallone. Oh. And they thinking he couldn't get Sylvester Stallone. And then Stallone was like, yeah, I'll do it. What the hell?
That makes sense. But what doesn't make sense is why would you make a sequel to Saturday Night Fever, first of all, well into the 80s.
Right.
Right. That's the first thing. And then second thing is it has nothing to do with anything. Like, it's very tenuously connected through dance. But like, to me, it would be like if the sequel to The Fast and the Furious was about horse racing.
It is just barely not an anthology series at this right. point.
It's like a second season of American Horror Story. We've got all the same characters, right. all the same act players, but different characters and story.
And then they meet with the Breakin series. There's Breakin 4.
Right.
Queens.
For a hot second, I thought I had slipped into Breakin. Wait a minute. This all seems very familiar.
Oh, I wrote the final scene of Breakin just walked in during like the first big dance concert that was like, I've seen this before.
Yep.
Well, I watched Saturday Night Fever this morning because I had never seen Saturday Night Fever. I did watch them out of order. I'm probably the only person in the world to watch Staying Alive first. And they are completely different movies. They could not be more dissimilar.
Really?
Did you enjoy it?
I wouldn't say that. Like, okay. We'll get more into it, but you know, the cult, you know, that's the wrong word. The story around Staying Alive is, man, Saturday Night Fever was a classic and Staying Alive was terrible. And it's like, Staying Alive is bad. Saturday Night Fever was also bad. Like, I know this is very 2020 of me, but like, we've had these conversations recently about like, it's awkward when you watch something from the 80s where, you know, they're using outdated slurs and things are awkward and you have to go, that wouldn't have been seen like that then. Saturday Night Fever has its misogyny and racism and homophobia baked into the plot. It is essential to the plot of the movie. And that makes for kind of an interesting product where, like, if you're really looking at Saturday Night Fever critically, it's like kind of about how these guys are angry because they're assholes who are going nowhere. And fundamentally, they're assholes and they have reasons to be angry because they're bad people with no ambition. But that's not what the movie's going for at all. It's just impossible to go back to. And for that, it's not all that interesting. I was barely entertained by Saturday Night Fever. It's better than Staying Alive, definitely. I don't think it's a good movie.
Mm. Well, all right then. That settles it. I am never, ever, 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 ever watching Saturday Night Fever.
Throw some salt over your shoulder.
I don't know. Is it on the list?
I think it has to be.
It must be.
I don't know. Robin, do you have a relationship with Saturday Night Fever that predates this week?
I watched it when I was in high school. Like, we talked about it a little bit at the end of last episode. It's like, I remember there being a harrowing rape scene and a guy falling off a bridge, spoilers. And I remember some of the dancing being cool, but I don't like disco music.
Right.
So it's not really for me. And I never seen this.
Well, this. Oh boy, this. Roger Ebert gave it 4 stars. And I think that's just because Gene Siskel loved it and he wrote the review after Siskel died, and so he was like, oh, I'm writing this one for Gene.
Oh.
Sometime after Siskel's death,
I get it.
Ebert went back and wrote an after-the-fact review of Saturday Night Fever, where he gave it 4 stars, but was really writing about how much Gene Siskel loved Saturday Night Fever. That's Gene cute. Siskel bought the suit. Gene Siskel owned the white suit.
Wow. Wow, that's anyway, dedication.
So, before I accidentally skip ahead several segments, something I didn't totally do and asked Robin to edit out, Camila, I understand you have a 60-second recap of Staying Alive for us.
I do.
And go.
Tony just wants to be a star. He keeps trying to get roles, but they don't work out. He's sort of dating Jackie, who is also a performer. One day he meets Laura, an awesome-ish dancer with monies and prestige. She blows him off until she sees him dance, and suddenly she's DTF. Tony gets the role in the chorus of a Broadway show called Satan's Alley. He makes plans to celebrate with Jackie, but then stands her up to go hang out with Laura, who has no idea or even care that he was coming around, so she had other plans, and Tony gets his panties in a bunch. This happens a few more times. Jackie tries to break up, but she gets sucked back in. He steals the lead male dancer's role, roll. There's lots of longing glances across the room and musical breaks. It's opening night, and we have to suffer through Satan's Alley and its one song and five dance combos for far too long. Tony kisses Laura. She scratches him. Jackie's cool with it. They finish the show, and Tony wins. He celebrates by strutting off into the subway steam.
Yep, 48 seconds, and really, that was that, you kind of punched it. You punched it up a little bit,
right? Exactly. It was going to be Sylvester Stallone wrote this. Sylvester Stallone wrote this. Sylvester Stallone wrote this. That was my original recap. And Tony's an asshole.
Oh. I'll tell you right now, though, I'll watch anything called Satan's Alley. Like, if you said, hey, they're selling tickets for Satan's Alley, I don't need to know if that's dance, theater, a movie, but I'm going to see Satan's Alley. That's
the title. Okay, the whole idea that this was a show, and then moreover, I believe a show on Broadway.
Wait, I'm sorry, for real, for reals? Right.
I think that they say it's on, he calls his mom, he's like, I got a job dancing on Broadway.
Well, yeah, it is on Broadway, but you're not saying that Satan's Alley exists outside.
No. Okay. That's what I'm saying. In the world of the film, can you imagine paying to see a Broadway show and seeing what occurs in this film?
Not only can I gladly would and would be happy with the majority of the points I'm giving this movie are for Satan's Alley.
Oh my God.
I love Satan's Alley.
Oh my God.
All right. Let's do the facts, and then we got to come back to talking about Satan's Alley, because I have so many things to say.
Staying Alive, which should have just been called Satan's Alley, was released July 15th, 1983. It was the 10th number one film of the year. It won its opening weekend with $12.1 million. This is the second consecutive week we are talking about a number one that had, at number three, the re-release of a Disney animated classic. Last week we talked about Purple Rain had a re-released Jungle Book in third. Staying Alive had a re-released Snow White and the Seven Dwarves in third with $6 million. So if that's third, what was in second? The movie that Staying Alive knocked off the top spot, fell to second this weekend, was Star Wars Episode VI, Return of the Jedi. Huh. Staying Alive is the movie that dethroned Return of the Jedi. It had been released over Memorial Day weekend that year, won 3 weeks. It was first knocked off for 1 week by Superman 3, but reclaimed the top spot for another 3 weeks. Staying Alive knocked it off for good. We've hit two of the three now, because the Deep knocked off A New Hope, and this knocked off Return of the Jedi.
Oh, wow.
It's not going to work, because we're going into Halloween month, but let's see if Tony gives us whatever took Empire out. Staying Alive was only a 1 week number one movie in America. It lost the top spot the following week to the debuting Jaws 3D. It hung around very well, though. 11 weeks in and around the top 10. A few of those, it came in at number 11. But for the wrap of this movie as a notoriously bad film, it was very successful. It earned $64.8 million. It was the number eight film of 1983. This earned more than National Lampoon's Vacation, Mr. Mom, Risky Business, Scarface, and both Superman 3 and Jaws 3D. Those all did not do as well as Staying Alive.
What?
Robin,
what?
Robin is seems baffled.
What?
So, like, I can imagine this movie doing numbers its first weekend, and then people are like, dude, it's right? bad, right? Like, anyone who was like, oh, yeah, I like that movie, maybe I'll go see it, wouldn't they be convinced not to?
Well, that's the problem. There was no internet. The word did not.
You're right.
It took so much longer for the word to actually get out. Nobody was like, you know, it's like you have to like travel like for real word of mouth. You had to work at it to make sure people knew how bad this movie was.
I was walked down the street with an air horn.
Rent a sandwich board. It's like, do not go see this movie. Save your, what was it, $1.25 to see movies
right.
back then?
I don't know. I think this is a bad movie that wouldn't necessarily have bad word of mouth. There's fun dancing and the music's good. So like, you know, normies could go, I had a good time. You should go see that.
Okay, but is the music good? It's very similar to Breakin' in that most of the music that they dance to is completely generic.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's all the same. Like, seriously, Satan's Alley is the same song. Fire.
Right.
What is it like?
I don't know.
Lust.
I think the force of, like, Saturday Night, well, we'll get to it, but Saturday Night Fever, $94 million in 1977. It was number three for the year. The only movies that beat it were Star Wars and Close Encounters, which is a way of saying many years that would have been the number one movie of the year. I think even 6 years later, it's the sequel to that giant hit we all remember and love.
Yeah.
Is enough.
Right, yeah.
That makes sense.
Ugh, normies.
Normies. I have not pulled that word out of my vocabulary in a long time. But anyway. The soundtrack was a big hit, sold 5 million copies worldwide. It peaked at number 6 in the United States, but it was the number one album in Switzerland. Okay, good for you. Four singles produced by the Staying Alive soundtrack. The Bee Gees' Woman in You peaked at 24. And Someone Belonging to Someone peaked at 49. Surprisingly, for, you know, a Bee Gees movie, the biggest hit from this film is Frank Stallone's Far From Over, the song that plays over the opening credits. You may remember it as this banger that I will now ask Robin to edit a scrap of into the show. Like, that one was good, right? That was every, you know, pump up 80s anthem. It was fun. It was a good time.
Oh my god.
It's fucking just me.
Yeah.
Just me on the music of Frank Stallone.
Oh, Frank.
I mean, it's fine.
That song peaked at number the biggest hit from this film. The fourth single was I'm Never Gonna Give You Up by Frank Stallone and Cynthia Rhodes, who did do her own vocal. That was one that they sang in the little club there.
When I'm never gonna give you up for someone else's love.
It did not chart, but this is the first time I'm able to reference the Yachtsky scale from the Beyond Yacht Rock podcast. Our rating scale is borrowed from Beyond Yacht Rock and their Yachtsky scale, where anything above a 50 is a Yacht Rock song and anything below a 50 is not. I'm Never Going to Give You Up is not, but it's very close. Mm. It got a 42 on the Yachtsky scale. Not quite Yacht Rock, but, you know, kind of in the general vicinity. Staying Alive, as mentioned, was critically panned. It maintains a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. Roger Ebert called the dance sequences especially laughably gauche. In 2006, Entertainment Weekly named it the worst sequel ever. Nevertheless, it was still nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Original Song for Far From Over, which lost to Flashdance, What a Feeling. Also lost the Soundtrack Grammy to Flashdance. Finally, this is one of three non-Rocky, non-Rambo films directed by Sylvester Stallone. The only things that aren't a Rocky or a Rambo that he made were his debut, Paradise Alley, this, and The Expendables. He directed the first Expendables.
Wow.
So with this being like, look, this is bad, but like Entertainment Weekly, this is the worst sequel ever. No, it's not.
Come on.
Like,
wait,
yeah, that's too harsh.
When did they say that? 2002?
2006.
2006. Yeah, come on, guys. Like, there's no way this is the
worst. At
that
point, we'd had three whole Star Wars prequels, or I guess they were prequels and not under consideration.
Yeah. And the fact that this is one of they the very, very rare movies
Freddy
with
movies.
A 0%.
Did you say 0%?
This is a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
And the fact that that's there, the fact that that is maintained to this day, and that I'm about to give this a Rotten Tomatoes score is really tempting. Like, when I discovered that, I was like, can I like this enough?
No.
To break the Staying Alive 0% and find a reason to vote fresh?
You can't.
No, but wouldn't that have been fun?
Have some integrity.
Right, come on, man. No. You are a member of the journalist. You are a journalist.
That. No, it doesn't happen that often at all. Usually something is like two, you know, but right. there's only a few movies with 0%. That's from like 25 reviews, because they usually don't have a lot of historic reviews. But...
Yeah, I just pulled the Wikipedia list of movies that are 0%.
I'm also looking at it. I see Bolero, which I believe had Bo Derek in it.
That was the, this is not a sequel to 10, but it's a sequel to 10.
Yep.
So is Staying Alive a bad movie that you can enjoy? Because I kind of, it's bad, but I didn't have a terrible time.
There were moments, like some very small and very far and few between, where it's like, I kind of was like getting the, oh, I can see how John Travolta was, you know, lady bait for a long time. Mm. He pulls off like this charming dude, like, very well, but his head is so fucking huge, like literally and figuratively in this movie.
For our listeners who have not seen this movie, John Travolta looks weirder than ever. And our working theory is that he lost 20 pounds, or we know that he lost 20 pounds getting
yes, he
in
lost
shape
20 pounds to look like a how he had a professional dancer's body.
He looks like veiny and very muscular and very low body fat, and the result is that his face looks like a caricature of a face that is already ridiculous.
Yes.
And it gives me like uncanny valley feelings. Like, he looks like John Travolta but not, and John Travolta already barely looks like a human being.
It's like, is this really John Travolta, or is somebody wearing a mask?
Right. Is this a squashed wax figure of John Travolta?
Or has there been a face?
There has been a face. That's Stallone. That's just Stallone. He put on the face. It's so weird, especially now when you remember what John Travolta, the today John Travolta looks like. A beige pile of yams. And like, and that in this movie they're like, take your shirt off because people need to see this. Like, wow, this is the same guy.
If you like very detailed muscles, then you will like John Travolta's look in Staying Alive.
It's just like, there's nothing about this movie that there are a couple moments where I chuckled, like the moment where he's like really hitting hard on Laura, where he's like, you appreciate me and I appreciate you, let's get together and appreciate each other for many hours. I'm like, okay, well done. Well played, sir. Well played. But for the most part, it's just like, I was rooting for Jack. Like, nobody, I didn't care about Tony. I didn't give a shit about Laura. And then I'm like rooting for Jackie. I'm like, Jackie, you can do this. And then it just got too hard. I'm like, Jackie, you suck. I can't do this with you anymore. Like, I know.
Jackie deserves better.
Right?
Jackie, go live your life.
Exactly. Like, go off into the sunset and you'll sing your duets with Frank Stallone. And right. You guys be happy together with your band and all that stuff. Leave Tony the fuck alone. This guy sucks.
He's not worth it.
No.
He really sucks. Like, the fundamental plot of this movie is just him two-timing two ladies. Like,
right.
Like that's the main driver of the action.
Exactly.
And I'm like, why? What does he want? What do they want? Who cares?
And there's also another thing that was making it difficult to enjoy this bad movie. Every 5 minutes, there's a fucking musical break. Like, yeah. We would have 5 minutes of dialogue and then musical break, montage. 5 minutes of dialogue, musical break, montage. And I just...
Like, I wrote down montage of montages.
It's a montage mania is what's happening here. And then not to mention like the fact that we had to watch the whole ass entirety of Satan's Alley. I'm like, this
is so here's where my brain fucking breaks with Satan's Alley. I know that this is a trope, right? Like, I love the movie Center Stage. Like, right. I understand that in the big finale number, certain things have to occur that move the plot
right.
in ways that an actual theatrical performance should not be able to, unless you're pulling a Hamlet, the play is the thing kind of situation, because it's a scripted rehearsed performance, right? This movie goes so far away from that concept and basically instead of saying here's the finale number, are like transport you into an alternate dimension wherein your life is a stage play. And he is improvising his choreography and her choreography, and they're having conversations and yelling at each other and kissing each other when they're not supposed to be in this Broadway play.
Right, right. Yeah.
That's so unprofessional.
You're never going to work this town
again. And all of that is why it's my favorite part of the movie. It was great.
I'm just watching his poor mother is in the audience. She's like crossing herself. Like, you know, this is much more.
She's acting like he is the greatest genius ever to grace the stage. And I'm like, this is messy.
Right. The whole thing is messy. And I was struggling to find, I'm like, is it just because this is in the early 80s and this is considered modern dance then that I am just not enjoying, because usually I am a sucker for these type of films.
Me
like
too.
These, you know, oh, it's the big finale, it's the big dance number, no matter what, I start to get chills and I'm just like, oh, everybody's doing so great, blah, and I'm just like, this needs to be over now, and I need, like, and I couldn't understand, like, I was trying desperately to find where they were finding the beat, like, what song are y'all dancing to, like, actually, because it's not this.
Okay, a huge mistake that they made in this movie is they didn't cast enough real dancers.
Right.
Right? Like, John Travolta is pretty good at dancing, but he's an actor. He's not a dancer. Like, right. He's not, I don't know. I'm also not a dancer. Maybe I'm wrong. But my take is that he's not as good a dancer as, like, Patrick Swayze, for example.
I would imagine.
So, not. Like,
Patrick Swayze is one of those dancers.
Is he?
You would have to freeze frame it to see his face. But yes, Patrick Swayze is in that ensemble.
Aww. Right. So, like, I don't know what John Travolta's like Patrick Swayze in that he was a dancer before he was an actor. But, like, he's not good enough
not
to be
level.
The best dancer in a dance movie.
No.
And he is. Because, no. Like, the soap opera lady, the bad girl of his love interest.
Laura.
She's, like, they barely even show her pretending to dance. And she can't do backflips like our friend from Breakin'.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason this took 6 years is because they kept not agreeing on what the script should be. And Travolta was such a big star that he could just be like, no, try again. And they would go and write a new script. Even the one that, like, almost made it to production was basically this story, but he became good enough to make it into the chorus, and that was it. Mm-hmm. And he was like, no, the audience is going to want to see Tony, like, triumph. So rewrite it where it just ends with him being the star.
I would have considered it a triumph had he just learned his fucking lesson and turned into a decent person. Because, like, you think it's going to happen when he walks all the way from Manhattan back to Brooklyn to his mom's house and he apologizes to her for being a dick and having an attitude with her and yada yada. And she's like, oh, no. Don't apologize for that. That attitude is what got you out of this neighborhood. No, ma'am. No, you are fucking this up. He's apologizing to you for being an asshole to you, and you are letting it go. You were letting
that
this shit slide.
Stallone writing himself an excuse for all of his bad behavior.
Mm-hmm. I did like that scene, but for some reason it ends, and Tony's got, like, a big hunk of Parmesan on his lip. Like I was like, oh, this scene works, and then at the end he's just smiling with food on his face. It's like, that was an easy edit, right?
Like,
can we take that again?
Not a big deal. You got a little something. Let's do it again. Take two.
Jackie was great, though.
Jackie's the best part of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, all of my points go to Jackie.
Exactly. Like I said, like, I spent most of the time rooting for her, and then it's just, I felt bad for her. Like, at the very end, when he goes and kisses Laura, and he's like, it didn't mean anything, and she's like, okay, and tongues him in the back, and I'm like, all right,
Jackie,
fine.
Get out of there. You deserve better.
And then, like, he doesn't go off and celebrate with her after everything is said and done. He's like, I'm gonna strut.
You're gonna strut.
And he says it. That's and I don't know. I'm assuming it's a callback from the previous movie. Because I know
is.
There's a lot of strutting.
It's the very beginning, I think, of Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah,
I know. Him walking down the street.
That's all I really know of Saturday Night Fever is that there's strutting and there's that disco scene with the suit.
So. Right. Oh boy.
Yeah, this was
Jackie is super interesting, by the way. Cynthia Rhodes.
Penny.
She has 5 credits. She was in 5 movies, and 4 of them were dancing movies. The only exception is Runaway with Tom Selleck. Her other 4 credits are Xanadu, Flashdance, Staying Alive, and Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And then she got married to Richard Marx for 25 years. The adult contempo singer-songwriter. And they had a long marriage, and she was like, yeah, I'm good. I don't need any more of this.
I mean, like, she's pretty, those are some pretty decent credits. Did you say Penny? Like, as in she was the sister in Dirty Dancing?
Yeah, she's the chick who has to go get an abortion in Dirty Dancing.
Got it.
Yeah.
And married to Richard Marx, and so she's very well off. She's fine.
I was, like, losing my mind. I was too lazy to go get my phone, but I was like, I know her from something. And then eventually I was like, Dirty Dancing!
Yeah, I couldn't place it either. I wonder what it's like to be married to Richard Marx. Is that like a snooze fest?
I feel like this is a whole tangent, but like, Camille, are you still watching The Vow?
Yeah.
Okay, so like, Catherine Oxenberg's house, I'm like, I know she's like a descendant of royalty, but I'm like, this is what residual checks buy for you.
Right.
Right. Yes. If you were part of a moderately successful property and could just live off of that forever.
Right.
Like, you can have a very comfortable life. And I feel like I would be great at that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like, she did what? Like, was it Knott's Landing or Dynasty or something?
And that's, Dynasty.
And there it is. And her mother is a princess, which I spent way too much time trying to figure out that logic. I'm like, well, wouldn't that make her a princess too? And automatically, yeah, fairy tales taught me nothing.
But I don't understand. Like, because it was so funny. I didn't know who she was. And then it said, like, in the captions, like, Princess Elizabeth on phone. And right. I was like, excuse me, what? Anyway.
Right. Staying alive.
Staying alive.
Staying. Okay. This guy has two jobs and everybody loves him. Why does he live in a broom closet? I do not understand his,
New York,
like,
real
struggle
estate.
Here.
I
know, but like,
also,
everyone in the
world.
Also,
he can't be making that money as a waiter. He keeps pouring things on people.
That's true.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was
the worst waiter ever.
But I think it was more, I don't think he's there for his waiting skills. I think it's more about how he looks in them pants. That's what the ladies are looking for. But it made
That's
me
true.
Really sad to watch him wash his clothes in his shower, like while he was showering. And I felt really, I started to feel bad for him, and they fucked it up with like his antics later on. It's like when he literally right after goes off with Laura, I think he made a plans with Jackie or something the first time. Laura sees him audition, is like, all right, let's do this. They go do their thing. And like literally with still her smell and scent on him, he goes and calls Jackie. I'm like, what are you doing? Can I come over now? What?
Yeah, fuck this guy. Like, and he was that way in the first movie and is maybe a little worse now.
Really?
Like, oh.
Well, also,
no,
the
I shouldn't say that,
like,
because he briefly tries to rape someone at the end of the first movie.
Right.
So he's not worse, but like, he's such a scummy character. I don't know how he became a megastar. I guess dancing real good, like on the strength of these like really douchey, like no one is supposed to like this guy, right?
Right.
I think in the first movie, you're allowed to say that some of his shittiness as a person is because he's a young guy trying to figure himself out. But in this movie, he is a solid grown up and there's no excuse.
Right. You moved out of the neighborhood, guy. You're living in Manhattan, guy. You're doing your thing. You just got a role in a Broadway show. Be better. And also, shout out to Red from That 70s Show for being like in the first 30 seconds of this
video. Yes! And never speaks. Also, the chick from Just One of the Guys is one of the women he hits on the clock at work.
Yes.
Or one of the women who hits on him, rather. Regardless. Oof.
Now, if you collide this movie with Suspiria, then we got a movie. Like, if it turns out that Fanula, what's her name, is actually the witch running the Broadway show. Like, she really is Satan. There's a movie. Come on.
There is a movie. That's a movie. That's something I could be on board with. I was hoping for something so much more from her.
The nominal climax of this movie is he does his own improvised solo. And then, not Jackie, but Laura, right? Laura?
Yeah.
Laura is like, what are you doing? And then a pillar starts to rise up, which Laura seems unfamiliar with, and she's afraid to jump up to, like, hit a pose with him. How is that not leading to, so Jackie comes up instead? Like, even in the weird double narrative where, like, Laura's kind of actually Satan now, it's like, okay, you're rewriting this show as you go, cast Satan aside, back into her alley, and pull a new queen or whatever, and it's Jackie. Great, it's an ending.
You've missed your calling, Sean. You should be directing Broadway shows.
I'm going to move to LA and be a guy who walks in exasperated 8 months into the scripting process. Like, well, why wouldn't you? Duh. I don't know. Do we rate it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Get this bitch out
Sean,
of my
sight. Sean, do you have my break-in rating available?
I'm sure I do.
Okay.
I like that. I
wrote
that
down 10 points less than break-in. I'm not committing to that. I just want to know what that is.
Your 10 points less than Breakin would be a 50. You gave Breakin a 60.
Jeez. Okay. No. I'm going to go with 22.
Yeah.
22. Camila.
31.
31. I hated this less than everyone else. Okay. But like I said, I gave it a 42. 22 of those points are for Satan's Alley. Were it not for Satan's Alley, this is a 20. But I really love Satan's Alley.
How did I give Break It a 60? Break It,
I don't know, man. What happened?
Has fallen in my memory. I guess I was just really happy with the breakdancing. There was that baby who breakdances. Okay, that's, I'm now understanding it. How it, yeah, got 60.
I think probably 30 the points broom. To the baby.
The broom. Yeah, okay. Broom. You're right, you're right, you're right. But
Ice,
this is...
Ice-T demonstrates what rap is, kind
sort of. He gives you a PowerPoint presentation on what rap maybe conceptually could be.
In the future. 31 and two-thirds is the score for Staying Alive. Certainly low on our list. We've had worse,
yeah,
but you don't need to watch this. No, I would argue that you could scrap the entire franchise, that you don't need to watch Saturday Night Fever. You barely need to listen to the soundtrack. You know what Staying Alive sounds like. You're fine. Just forget the whole thing.
Just let it go.
You don't need to wear a white suit. That's just always good advice.
Right.
Yeah.
Two, the bingo card.
Nothing.
I don't see anything.
Nothing.
This cameo. Even... Cameo. Sylvester Stallone. Cameo?
Where was Sylvester Stallone? Where?
Early in the movie, Tony walks by Sylvester Stallone on the street, and Sylvester Stallone turns and looks at him, like, in full Sylvester Stallone regalia. Like, right. It's not like, oh, that guy in the background for a second, that was Sly. It's like, no, Sylvester Stallone was on screen looking like Sylvester Stallone and stared at the main character.
All right.
That is a full director cameo.
All right.
Hey!
Sweet. Got it.
That's, like, literally exactly what a celebrity cameo is.
Exactly. That's...
Like, I'm really glad you noticed it.
Me too, because I sure as hell didn't see that.
Yep, I was probably getting a Diet Coke.
And I think
that's
pretty sure that's it.
Probably it.
That also gets me one away. If we get a movie from 1988, that's a bingo.
I still got a ways to go.
Unless you count Tony constantly screwing over his girlfriends as double crosses.
I know. I thought about that for a second. Too, but I'm going to go with no.
Yeah.
He's just a bitch ass.
Take that, Travolta. It's time that someone tore Travolta down a peg. No one has insulted him over the past 20 years.
Also, his wife just died. We should.
Like, what?
And his son,
like, 2 years
right?
ago?
His son died a few years ago. His wife died earlier this year.
Oh, really?
Was
Yeah.
Anyway. And he had to work for Fred Durst. It's been a rough couple of years.
Yikes.
What was he? What? Why?
There's a movie from last year that Fred Durst directed starring John Travolta.
John, he's really
supposed to be very bad.
He's trying to like do the whole Nick Cage thing with like, you know, two movies a month. Doesn't matter who wrote it, who directed it, who's involved. Like, sure, I'll do it. Yeah.
And he was great in American Crime Story. That was the flash of brilliance.
Right.
Reminds us that this was once a useful person.
He has it in him.
Even Hairspray. I know that it's sacrilege. Like, clearly that's divine and should only ever be divine. But when I'm watching the new Hairspray, I'm like, yeah, he's kind of getting it though. Like, he kind of gets what this role is and he's doing it.
Right. Yeah. I think he did a good job in that.
So it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. What y'all been watching?
I haven't watched anything other than TV, and I started watching Spiral, but haven't finished it yet. Which I started watching it because of you, Sean, because you had tweeted about it, and then I got real super excited because there is a new installment in the Saw franchise called Spiral, and I thought, oh, it's on VOD.
Different one.
Yeah, and then
nope.
And then I saw that it was not it, but I did start it.
It's good. It finishes a lot better than it starts, but I appreciate that movie more than I like it. But certainly for it's new, it's spooky season, go ahead, watch Spiral.
Right.
But
and I like,
the ending is better than the beginning.
I like the guy who plays Malik. He's on a show that I really liked watching, Unreal. I really liked his character on that.
Robin?
So I watched Hidden Life, the Terrence Malick movie from last year that kind of got lost in the Oscar season shuffle. It's excellent. It is devastating. This is a movie about a conscientious objector in Austria in World War II. Basically, like, he'd been in army and was okay with it. And then Hitler became Hitler. And he was like, actually, I'm not okay with being in the army for this guy. And so they're like, well, you're going to jail and then we're going to murder you. It's 3 hours of that. very beautiful location filming. A lot of Terrence Malick, light through the trees. This, in this case, light through the grass. There's a ton of reaping of grass throughout the whole film. If you ever buy into Terrence Malick's whole tone poem thing, you will hear. Like, this is, I would say, one of the most effective movies that he's ever made. If that ever works for you, watch this movie, 100%. It is, however, really, really hard to watch a movie about, like, well, what will you do when you live in a fascist country? What will you do when they knock on your door and say, hey, time to sign an oath to Trump? So that's really hard. And then I also started thinking a little bit about, like, is this martyrdom story really a useful thing to be telling in 2019? Things were better a year ago, but, like, shouldn't we be thinking about stories about how to fix problems instead of just dying nobly while they go on? Oof. I also watched 20 minutes of that really gross misogyny fest that has on Netflix that has all the young actors in it. The Devil All the Time.
Yeah, The Devil All the Time.
Misogyny fest?
I made it about 20 minutes in before I was like, and this is gross.
Is it terrible?
It's one of those movies where it's like, remember when men were men and beat their wives?
Oh, cool.
I mean... Yes, it's
only watched 2 minutes of, but that's what it is, right?
It's one of those things about how, like, if enough desperate poor people in, you know, like, the dregs of Appalachia collide with one another, eventually everybody's going to kill everybody. And, like, it, you know, if you want, like, quote, a nasty little movie, if you just want to watch some characters kill each other for 2 hours,
yes,
great. it is an okay movie at best, and it's mostly okay because the performances are really good. Tom Holland and Sebastian Stan, Riley Keough, Mia Wasikowska, whichever Sarsgaard is Pennywise. It has a really good cast, but it's an okay movie at best because it's just relentless. Like, here's a parade of violence. But that makes it actually, I think it's good for Netflix because like somebody gets killed every 15 minutes. So like, you're not going to get bored because you're like, oh shit, a new horribly dramatic death. You know,
I made it two murders in.
Yeah, it's just a movie. It's not a series. Two murders in 20 minutes and it was two murders. Jeez.
Actually, technically they were the same murder. Now that I think about it, it was like, and then he murdered her. Couple other scenes, somebody gets beat nearly to death, and then it's like, remember when we said, and then he murdered her? Here it is, he murdered her. That was when I was like, no, done.
Oh, that's three, because they find the crucified soldier right away.
Oh, yeah.
So that gives you a sense of the film. They find a crucified soldier immediately upon the film starting.
Sweet.
That did freak me out.
It's a ride. It's certainly a ride. If you want to see all of the stars of tomorrow, they're all in this movie for some reason.
I watched the first episode of Ratched.
Oh, how is that?
Why does Hollywood keep giving Ryan Murphy money? I'm just, I'm over him. I'm over him very much so. Like, it's beautiful. Like, the costume and sets design, gorgeous. Cinematography, love it. But the first episode was just like, meh. So,
well, going back to American Crime Story, he sometimes does a good job.
Right. Like,
yeah.
The word is he has like nothing to do with American Crime Story. It is just like a tendril of his empire. But I like American Horror Story, you know.
I did
60% of the time.
Oh yeah, like up to the last two seasons, I'm like, I'm out. I the last one I watched was like the Charlie Manson one. And that was like, okay. And I tried to watch the devil worship one. And I was like, nah. And I tried to watch the 80s slasher one and nope.
Oh, I loved AHS 1984. You're hitting me right in the sweet spot there.
I know,
but
that's
like...
what I thought too. And then I watched the first episode. I'm like, I don't, I just didn't care. I don't.
My only problem with that series, well, I have, no, not my only problem. My biggest problem with that series is it's like, and this episode, there's a werewolf. Wait, you thought it was about a werewolf? Now there's seven witches. Wait, you thought it was about the seven witches? Now there's a torture room. Wait, you thought it was about the torture room? Like, it's like, you can just pick how, like, two or three. Do it like a Batman movie. Take two villains and call it a day. Like, you don't have to introduce.
We don't have to have all of them.
You don't have to raise the stakes. Right. I like it a lot. There are three seasons. There are only three seasons I've watched all the way through. Mm. Only the original Coven, because Coven is great.
Yeah, that's and my favorite one.
1980. Coven, where eventually Stevie Nicks as herself is a character because they're just like, yeah, she's probably a witch. Come on in.
That checks out. That makes sense to me.
Exactly. It's just like, let's not sugarcoat this any further, Stevie. She's like, yes, it's, yeah. I figured.
So I accidentally watched Unhinged again.
accidentally? Was it a double feature at a drive-in?
Oh, this was such a comedy of errors. The drive-in I was at, I made the mistake of going on a cold Sunday night. Like, I should have anticipated, like, this might not pan out. But I went on a cold Sunday night to see, hopefully see Fast Times at Ridgemont High and Dazed and Confused. I was one of two cars there, and eventually a very nice lady said, yeah, we can't. Like, they have some policy where they can't press play
For
fewer than five cars. I don't know why that's the policy. I'm sure there's a good reason. Like, I'm sure they aren't. That's not arbitrary. Like, there must be a reason for that. So they were like, we're giving you your money back. Two, we're giving you an extra ticket that you can use whenever. If you feel like staying, we're only running one screen. Feel stay or don't.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's on that screen? And they're like, Tenet and Unhinged. And I'm like, okay, look, as much as Tenet makes me angry rant, as listeners will know by now, I was like, I guess I should see it again. Like, I guess now that I'm not, like, straining to understand it, mm-hmm. I'm like, it's worth checking this out to see if, like, I appreciate it more. It has had some really good reviews. I pull over and settle in for Tenet. And then I'm like, oh, she said it wrong. Unhinged is first. And at this point, I'm just like, I didn't drive out here just for cheese sticks. I guess I'll watch Unhinged again.
I know, that's funny, because that's funny you say cheese sticks, because that was my first thought, was like, well, you could have had some snacks, like load up on some snacks, because everybody loves the movie theater snacks. How long was the drive?
That was to Winter Drive-In, so it was like 55 minutes. Mm-hmm. If this had been dependable and it were 30 minutes away, I'd been like, no, I'm going home. I have movies there.
Right.
But there was enough of a journey involved. Unhinged doesn't get better the second time. It's still a terrible script. But then last night, I did go to Dependable and saw Alone, a movie I've heard almost nothing about. It starts the same as Unhinged and then gets better. Alone is also a movie about a lady driving in her car a weird guy starts harassing her in the car.
I want to see that.
Instead of becoming kind of a dumb, like, character-driven villain movie like Unhinged, like, it progresses and the story goes places, and it's, you know, it's a little exploitation-y, it's a little pulpy, but I enjoyed it. It was a much better version with no stars and a micro budget. So if Alone is playing at a drive and a perfect drive-in movie, so I would sincerely recommend Alone. Yeah, that's new.
Huh.
Oh, and Kajillionaire, the Miranda July movie. It charmed me to death. It was irresistibly charming. Like, I know she's like the hipsterest hipster that ever hipstered, like so, like, self-consciously, like, indie and cute, but it was just charming, partially because Evan Rachel Wood is great and Gina Rodriguez is great and they're great together, and it's a cute little movie that apparently is coming out just in theaters. What the hell is wrong with you?
Okay.
That's not
it's
cool.
It's out just in theaters this week and will be on demand like 3 weeks later, so.
Like, that's the type of movie that it's okay. Like, we don't need, like, nobody can claim that you need to see it on the big screen. It's fine. Right. Let's just put it on VOD.
So none of us bit on Antebellum then?
I had heard so many bad things about it that I was like, you know what? I'm not going to give you my little $20. Because I'm sick of this whole, like, me paying $20 to watch a movie that's terrible at home. Like, you know what? It's like, not today. Not today, Satan. We're not going to do this. I'm going to sit around and wait for it. And also, you know, there's only so many fucking slave movies.
Right. My friend Paul Fields on Twitter said, the black horror renaissance is quickly becoming spooky racism.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, God.
I mean, I didn't want the disappointment because it looked great. And I love Janelle Monáe. Like,
She's such a good actor.
I know.
She's such a good stage screen presence. Like, she's so, I want to watch her.
Right.
I wish she did better movies. Like, because when she's in good movies, she's great. Like, and even in small roles, like, she's so good in Hidden Figures and in Moonlight.
Right.
Like, I want her to get a starring role in a good movie.
Right. I mean, I'll more than likely watch it when it's free or at least $5 rental.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I just didn't want the disappointment because I was looking forward to it. And then the reviews came out and it was like, I don't want to be let down today.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know what won't let me down? Dun, dun, dun. The next movie. Yay. Because we don't have to draw one. Here's the deal. So next week, we are not drawing a movie at random. If you recall when we had Addy on to talk about Alien, there are actually two auction winners this year. Thank you all so much for bidding. It was so flattering that there were so many people who wanted to be on the show and support Arcade Comedy Theater through the auction that Arcade reached out to us and said, can we have two winners and auction this prize off twice? One winner was Addy. The other was John Greenlee. John very kindly bid, supported Arcade to be on the show. And when we asked him what he wanted to talk about, he came up with Halloween 2.
Yay!
The sequel to the original. If you haven't seen this, this is the rare sequel that just picks up immediately. Halloween ends, and then 5 minutes later, Halloween 2 begins. It's the rest of that night. I've only seen it once, so I'm looking forward to seeing it. In fact, I only saw it once, and I know for a fact this is a movie I got on Netflix in the mail.
Ooh. Ah.
Remember when?
Remember that? Yeah. Strange, difficult times. We held off a little bit, allowing this to start our spooky month. Camila and I begged Robin to let us extend the Halloween run into four whole episodes.
Four whole episodes, which I'm going into without a veto.
Bless your soul, Robin. Bless your soul.
Yes. So, listen, 2020 has been a hard year, and I feel stronger than ever.
Really? I mean, what's scarier, Michael Myers or the front page of the New York Times?
Exactly.
Seriously.
So you can face anything now, Robin.
Exactly. I'm not afraid anymore.
That's the lesson you're supposed to learn at the end of all of these movies.
Right.
So after next week, we will draw three more horror or spooky or ghosty. You know, it could be Nightmare Before Christmas. It could
That's
be
right.
totally. Yeah. We'll get back into Halloween season starting next week with Halloween 2. So looking forward to that. Wrapping it up, it feels so awkward not drawing a movie.
It does. Yeah, I feel like this sense of incompleteness. Don't you dare draw a movie just for fun.
No, I won't. Okay. I'm not. I stopped. I've learned my lesson.
All right.
For a while, anyway. Staying Alive was released on July 15th, 1983. What was the number one song in America when this movie hit theaters?
Journey?
No,
Lionel
not
Richie.
Always a good guess. In fact, we were out when we took that little road trip 2 weeks ago. I found a Spotify playlist that was every number one of the 80s in order.
Beautiful.
Before we did this podcast, if anybody's ever like, well, how does Robin know these songs that no one's ever heard of? Because I made a 90s and 2000s version of that playlist. And I have somebody else's 1980s version of that playlist somewhere in my saved playlist on Spotify.
Interesting. Hmm.
It's a good way to listen to music.
Yeah, it is.
Journey, no. Lionel Richie, no.
The Police?
Correct. Ooh, what's the track?
Don't Stand So... No, that's too early. Is it? Don't Stand So Close to Me? Every Little
Every
Thing?
Breath You Take?
It's Every Breath You Take. Which is the number one movie. It was the number one song of the year with an 8-week run. And it's sandwiched between themes from better dancing movies, because Flashdance was number one for 7 weeks and Maniac was number one for 2 weeks.
Nice. I wrote down in my notes, guess Flashdance. I forgot to do it.